Hi, guys. I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic. Man, a little nervous here. Well, I don't know. That might make me a little more nervous. So.
You want me to take my shirt off?
I'll take my shirt off. Yeah. So my sobriety date is August 18th of 2009. Man, it feels like I've been sober a really long time in some ways, and in other ways it feels like I don't know shit. And I guess that's a good thing, right? I don't know. I continue to sort of stay curious about my spiritual life and about things that I can improve on in my spiritual life and my program, and I've consistently had a sponsor throughout my whole sobriety, and I've consistently worked the steps for the most part, right? I'm not perfect, and I've had little lapses in my program here and there, but for the most part, I have consistently worked this deal, and I think that's a main contributor to why I've stayed sober, this long, because I was just like you guys, junkie, alcoholic. I did it all. I didn't really say no to much. I grew up in a really small rural town outside of San Antonio, South San Antonio, farm town. Wasn't much to do, except get fucked up, kind of had to entertain myself as a kid a lot. We lived on a big plot of land, and I would get lost out in the woods, literally a couple times got lost out in the woods, ended up on a neighbor's property, and had to call my parents to come find me. So I got really good at entertaining myself, I made up a lot of stories. Like, I was really, had a really great imagination, and I was good at sort of fantasizing and making up these stories, and that, for better or worse, that came to kind of haunt me later in my addiction and recovery. You can ask this guy. I've got lots of stories to run around in my head. But, that being said, I will say that my childhood was sort of rough, man, but I don't blame my childhood anymore on my addiction and my alcoholism. And I used to before I found AA. I used to blame my alcoholism and addiction on anything I could, before I found AA. My dad was an addict. He sold meth, made meth, did meth. My mom did meth, didn't make it, but she helped him do it. And it was, some of your parents maybe did drugs too, and you can kind of relate to how sort of unpredictable household is in that sort of scenario, and it really was, one day everything could be fine, and then the next week, it's like fucking chaos, and I wouldn't see my dad for weeks at a time, and wasn't told why. I was always told that he was working, had to work a lot. The reality was he was like on these 2-week benders, it was kind of hard being a little kid out living out in the middle of nowhere and not really having anybody else around. We didn't really talk about our feelings in my family or there was just nothing to talk about, there was no reason to be upset about anything. Everything was okay, it was all going to work out. We just figure it out later. And that was sort of a theme, growing up for me. So eventually my parents would get divorced, and I wouldn't see my dad for a few years. He went to jail for a little while, got out, and then my mom kind of kept me and my sister away from him for a while, and I built up a lot of resentment around that I would have to later work through in sobriety. But anyways, yeah, pretty tumultuous upbringing for a while. I got picked on a lot. I was like a little skinny, redheaded, freckled kid. Yeah, still am. Yeah. Not so little, but, yeah, you know, like everybody says, didn't fit in. I didn't feel like I fit in. Didn't feel like belonged anywhere. The same old story, right? And I get to high school, and, you know, I will say I was a late bloomer compared to most of you guys, probably. I didn't have my first drink till I was about 16. I remember it pretty vividly. And I was in high school, sophomore, I think, or junior. And I had a buddy who had an older brother. I think he was maybe 21 at the time. And he had an apartment in town. And that's what we called it. We called it town, like San Antonio, like it was in town, you know. It was like a go to town. He had an apartment, and we went to his brother's place, and we decided that we were all going to try smoking weed, and we're going to get drunk, you know. And none of us had ever smoked. It was me, my buddy Alex, another friend, and his older brother. And his older brother was going to buy us the pot and the booze, and we were just going to hang out for the night and get wasted, and that was our plan. And so we got this big old ice chest, and we set it up in his living room. I don't know, for some reason, it was four of us, and filled it up with Miller Lite and Zima. You guys remember Zima? Yeah. Yeah. So my first drunk was on Zima. So that's how hardcore I am. But it was fucking badass, man. Like, there's four dudes and an ice chest full of Zima. I might have had a Miller Lite. Anyways, we got through a few of those, and we're like, all right, time to get high, right? Like, this was a very deliberate sort of, like, thing, right? Like, we were going to get drunk, and we were going to get stoned, and it was going to get it was going to be badass, and we had a plan. And so we all pitched in the money, right? And this was, you know, looking back, this was sort of the first, I can see the first instance of sort of my addiction, right? Like, the first sign is we all pitched in some money, and it was like, I don't know, $20. And back then, well, you know, this was 2002, there wasn't a lot of good weed, you know? It was this, we called it swag. It was that, like, really gross seeds and stems and shit in it. But you get, like, a big-ass bag of that shit for, like, $20. And so we all pitched in, you know, like, $5, and it's like, cool. So Rudy was going to go get this weed, we all pitched in the money, and I said, man, I don't know if that's going to be enough. Like, I never smoked weed before. I didn't know how much it cost. I didn't know how much you got for $20, but there was something inside of me that thought, I don't know if $20 worth is going to be enough. And, you know, and that's sort of the story of my addiction and my alcoholism is it was never enough, even when it was too much, right? And so we got high, got drunk, and it was awesome. It was fucking badass. And it continued to be awesome for a few years, and it sort of just went on like that, smoking weed, getting drunk on the weekends, you know, skipping school, smoking in the baseball dugout, you know, things that high school kids do. And things started to sort of really change around that time for me. And it wasn't, you know, people say a lot, like, you know, when I drank or when I got high, I felt like I fit in and like I had a purpose, right? Bless you. And And for me, it wasn't even when I was high or drinking. It was on the way to get high, right? On the way to get drunk. Just thinking about it, I felt different. I didn't even have to have it in my body. And so it was you know, like for all of us, it was a solution that I guess I was looking for. I didn't know I was looking for it. I thought I was just sort of doomed to be inside my head for the rest of my life. And it kind of just landed in front of me, and I ran with it. And that's about the time I started playing music. And I met a guy in high school, this kid Michael, and we connected in a big way musically, and you know, we had very similar personalities, and it turns out we both liked to get really high, so it kind of worked out really well. And he would kind of be my running buddy throughout high school for a while, and he's the one that eventually turned me on to cocaine. And thanks. And it was the same thing with that, right? We it was very deliberate, like, all right, we're gonna get some cocaine, right? We're gonna get high on coke. So we went, and I knew this guy from high school that said he could get us some blow. So we went and got this shit from George and brought it. It was a 20 bag again. And brought it back to Michael's house. And man, we just started cutting shit up. Like, we knew what we were doing. Like, I don't know where we got it from, but we just started, like, it was like we'd done it our whole lives. Started cutting the shit up, and we started doing our coke, doing the rails, and fell in love again, right? Like, this is fucking awesome, and, you know. This is even better than the booze and the weed. And same thing with that. It worked really well for a while, and it was sort of like on the weekends playing music and doing blow, and it was fun, you know, and continued to be fun. It didn't suffer a lot of consequences, and it was the same thing, you know. It changed the way I felt even before I did it, so I continued to do it. And at some point there, I started to cross this line, I think, that I didn't know I was crossing, where I was starting to sort of break some promises, you know, to myself. I would tell myself I was only going to do it this weekend, and this weekend turned into Thursday and Friday, turned into Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you know. Turned into, you know, I was still in high school, lying to my mom about something so I could get some money for something to buy some dope with. But, you know, nothing too serious still. And that went on for a while, and I started drinking a little more. And by this time, I had graduated high school, and I sort of had the first big consequence of my using and drinking. And I was at a buddy's house. I was in college at this time in San Antonio. I went to a buddy's house to play music, and he got a case of Ice House. I don't know if you guys remember Ice House. Well, that shit fucked me up, man, and I drove home in a blackout and ended up, I don't remember this, but I woke up, went out to look at my car, and it looked a little off, right? Like, it looked a little not level. So I went around the other side, and the strut had broken in half, and the tire was sideways. Half of the bumper was missing, and I wasn't sure how you could physically drive a car home like that. But there it was, sitting in my driveway, right? And I mean, I knew I was in trouble, you know, still living with my parents. But, you know, looking back on that, that's some, you know, I don't know if I killed somebody, you know, still to this day, I don't know, you know. Because I don't remember what happened. I don't remember what I hit. Who knows, you know? Still don't know. I'll never know. And I think for a lot of people that would sort of be a little bit of a wake-up call. But it wasn't for me. And I think a couple months later, same buddy Michael introduced me to heroin. Yeah. So, oh man, I really love that shit. What I love the most about it is I could do it all night long and still go to sleep. That was the good part about it, because I was not sleeping much on the blow. So it was a good rest for a while, but that didn't last very long, the rest anyways, because that shit, I mean, that it got a hold of me in a bad way. You know, it wasn't long before I was shooting it. And it wasn't long before it was, you know, it was every day. It was every morning. And, you know, waking up and not being able to do anything until you get high was not a fun place to be. But I had, you know, I had no way out at that point. And again, I had no one to talk to about this, right? Like, you know, my family dynamic was still how it was when I was a kid. You know, we didn't talk about this kind of shit. There was nothing to talk about. You just figured it out, right? And in the small town I grew up in, there was no recovery. There was no, you know, alcoholism wasn't a thing. And if it was, you just had to deal with it, right? Like, everybody had a drunk uncle that they just fucking dealt with because he was an alcoholic. But, you know, it was just part of the family dynamic. And yeah, so that went on for a little while, and you know, I started doing things that I hadn't done before. I started stealing, from my little sister. I started stealing my stepdad's tools, pawning those. Pawned a lot of guitars. I pawned this guitar my dad had given me, this old '80s like $1,000 Ibanez. Guitar that I think I got $100 for it or something, you know. But it got me through the day, right? So that's all I really needed. And yeah, so I went on like that for a little while. And finally, I think my stepdad had busted me with some, he found a rig or something in some empty balloons somewhere. And so, you know, we had a talk. Right. And we're like, what are we going to do about this? And I'd already kind of been looking into some options for myself. And I had heard a couple of buddies of mine getting on methadone. Right. And so this sounds interesting. Right. You get on methadone and you just like stop doing heroin. It's like magic. Like, all right, you know, we didn't know, you know, they didn't know anything about recovery. Like, all right, let's get you on this methadone. So they take me to the methadone clinic, and I get on the methadone, and, you know, I think I stay clean for a few days, and then I had the weirdest 2 months of my entire life, because I started shooting blow, and that was the bottom of the bottom for me. I put myself in some situations that I'm not sure how I made out alive, you know? Put myself around some people that I'm not sure why they didn't kill me. And man, you know, I didn't stop. I kept going. I had a relative that lived here in Austin that had heard about what was going on, and she drove down to see me and talk to my parents, and basically, you know, was the only sane person in the room. Was like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Like, this dude needs some fucking help. Like, you know, like, you gotta get him some help. So that day she took me to my first NA meeting. My first 12-step meeting was NA meeting in a small town next to mine, you know, it didn't really have much of an effect on me, but it was the first sort of step in that direction, and I decided to move to Austin, and I was going to go to treatment, I was going to get clean, and I was going to stay in Austin, you know, and I thought that was the right move, because, you know, I was hanging out with the wrong people, I was hanging out with the wrong crowd, my parents were what the problem was, right, like, it was that shitty town, that's what the problem was, And it was the drugs. Like, I just got hooked on the wrong drugs. Like, I just got hooked on a really, you know, addictive drug. I thought that that's what the problem was. And so I move up here and, you know, I go into treatment. And 30-day stint. I knew nothing about rehab, right? I thought you went to rehab and you like went to some counseling and then you got out and then you were just kind of fixed, right? And you could like drink and shit or whatever. Like you were just, you know, cured. Yeah, cured. And so I went in with that idea and that's not what they told me. They said, here are these steps. A lot of them say God. You can't drink anymore. I didn't think drinking was my problem. God definitely was a problem. And so I didn't think it was going to work, right? I was pretty discouraged from the get-go. But, you know, I hung in there. I stayed in and they told me, you know, read We Agnostics. It's like, all right, so I got this book and read We Agnostics. And I was like, this does nothing for me. You know, like, what is that? Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I still don't believe in God. And I just say that because, you know, I know a lot of people that come in here and have trouble with this God idea, right? And that was me. And a lot of people suggested a lot of things for me, but until I came to sort of the very bottom of my addiction, like there was no way for me to sort of put aside any ideas that I had, right, about God or about spirituality or about what it said in the book about all those things. And I had to find my, I just had to come to a bottom where I was desperate enough to like just shed all that shit, right? And realize that, you know, for me, it was just sort of this practical program of action, right? Like I just do these things in the book and those things worked whether or not I believe in God or not. And I've seen that work for plenty of people. You know, I know plenty of atheists in AA and in my home group that don't believe in God but have stayed sober for years because they do what it says in the book, right? And they meditate and they pray because you can pray and not believe in God, as it turns out. And it works. So, but at that time, you know, at that time there was no telling me any of that shit, right? So I get out and everything's going to be good. Like I'm going to go to a meeting that night and I'm going to stay sober. Well, on my way home, I decide, well, maybe I'm not going to go to the meeting. Maybe I'll go to 12th and Jacone and try to score some crack, you know? So that's what I did instead of go to the meeting. And I couldn't find any drugs. So I was like, well, fuck it. Maybe I'll go to the meeting. So I ended up going to this meeting. And as you can tell, I mean, maybe you know by now, I didn't stay sober very long after this. I stayed sober maybe a few months and you know, I decided, you know, fuck this. I'm like I said, I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I don't believe in God, therefore I don't belong here. This isn't going to work for me. So I started drinking. This time I was about 21. And I spent a few years just sort of drinking, not really using a ton. I'd do some blow every once in a while at a party. I worked in the service industry, got a job, and I started just sort of shacking up with any woman that would let me, stay in their house, and kind of wandered around like that for a little while. Didn't really have a place, and just took advantage of a lot of people for a while. I remember. there was this one moment, before I got sober that I was hanging out with a friend, and this was right before I went out that time after I got out of treatment, and I was telling him, I'm thinking about drinking. This is what's going on. I don't think I'm in the right place. And she sat with me outside in her backyard, and I was a mess. I was sort of kind of having a panic attack, and she sat with me, and she said, close your eyes, just relax, close your eyes, and basically, I know now, kind of did this guided meditation with me. She's like, let's breathe a little bit, pay attention to your breath, and just be quiet for a minute. And we did that for a few minutes, and nothing had ever worked like that besides drugs and alcohol, as far as calming my brain down like that did. And that was the first time I'd ever experienced anything that had done that besides drugs and alcohol. And looking back on that now, I know that was my first spiritual experience, right? That was my first connection with a higher power. I had no idea at the time it was, but looking back at it now, like that was what that was. And it was, and it was as simple as that, right? It wasn't this sort of magic, magical sort of, what is it? Like a burning bush moment, right? It was just, I got quiet for a minute, and I was able to escape from those thoughts. And I was able to be present, and I'd never been present like that before without the help of drugs and alcohol. And so, like I said, I went on for another few years, and things just kind of got messy. And I got arrested for a DWI, but I didn't have a ton of consequences like I'd had sort of using in that way. I held a job for a while. I had a girlfriend for a while. We moved in together, and she was just as alcoholic as I was. But I just kind of slowly came to this realization that this was just kind of going to be it, right? Like I was just going to... My goal at that point was to just be able to get fucked up and just kind of not have any consequences. As long as I could get fucked up and not have consequences, then I would be okay, But I think I knew I wanted something more than that, right? Like there was part of me that knew I could do something else. And so, I don't know. I think I started listening to that. And I sort of felt my guard start to drop a little bit those last few months as far as what I thought I knew about myself, about life, about, my thoughts on God or AA or all that shit started to sort of dissolve. And I don't know if that's out of desperation or if that was grace, a little bit of both. And it probably was both. But I decided to call a buddy of mine that I had met in treatment to take me to a meeting, and so I went to the Bolden 5:30 meeting, and that was August. Well, I actually had a drink that morning, so it was the next day I think that I started counting my sobriety date, and I stayed sober ever since then. And I got a sponsor within my first week of being sober. I found him at Bolden. And I just picked the guy that I thought that looked the coolest. He had full tattoo sleeves. He did like graffiti art for a living, and I thought he was fucking badass. He stayed my sponsor for a while, for a year, and we worked through the steps, And I went to, they say go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to like 300 meetings in a month or something, I didn't have shit to do. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was working, but my life before that just revolved around drinking 24/7. I'd wake up and start drinking. So I woke up and went to a meeting. And that's kind of what my life looked like those first few months. People invited me to coffee and dinner after meetings, and I was fucking scared as shit. They were asking me how my day was and what'd you do today. And it's like, I went to 3 meetings, man. That's all I did today. But, you know, I started connecting with people in a sober way, and my life started to change because of it. And like I said, I dropped all my ideas about what I thought God was or what I thought the steps were, and I did whatever my sponsor told me to do. And I called him every day, and we went through the steps. And, you know, I didn't have any trouble with the first step. It was pretty clear to me that I couldn't drink like other people. And you know, it was pointed out to me that the definition of the first step was that I couldn't not drink. And when I did, I had about 80% of the time I had no control over how much I put into my body. Because there were those times that I did, and that's kind of what always tripped me up, right? But what about those few times that I did have control? And I could relate to that, and went through the doctor's opinion, and it laid out exactly, you know, what my alcoholic disease was, and I could relate to it, you know, for the first time. You know, then we came up to the second and third step, which, you know, I just went through the motions. I had no idea what God was. I wanted to know really bad, though. And that sort of was a hindrance to me for a little while. But my sponsor just reassured me just to work through the steps and that it would, you know, it would reveal itself. And so we did, worked through the second and third step. And we got to the end of the third step, and he said, now for this third step, we're going to say this prayer. And in order to complete the third step, you just start your fourth step. So we did that. So I started my fourth step. And, you know, we did a fifth step. When we got to the fifth step, you know, I think that was the first time in my life that I can honestly say that I did anything to improve myself or take responsibility for sort of my actions and my life. And I felt good, you know. I felt like, I don't know. I was still really confused on what the steps were supposed to be about and what they meant, but I knew that I was headed in the right direction, and I knew I was taking steps to get, you know, where I needed to be. And so we just continued on the steps, and, you know, I started making amends, and about 9 months sober, I started sponsoring guys. And, you know, and that's kind of what, you know, my programs look like since then. I've had a few other sponsors. I've been working with the sponsor I have now, for about, 3 or 4 years. He knows me really well. I try to be as honest as possible with him. You know, I'm almost 8 years sober, so sometimes it gets a little tough to pick up the phone when shit's going on. I feel like I should sort of have my shit together in a way that I really don't. I don't know. Sometimes it's hard staying teachable, and it's hard to admit that I still don't have the answers. And I'm not fucking cured, right? Like, I still have to go to meetings, and I still have to have sponsees, and I still have to talk to other alcoholics. And I still have to do inventory and 10 steps and do all that shit that I did when I was first sober. And maybe now I think the biggest difference is, like, a lot of that is sort of a way of life now. And I don't have to think about it as much. It's just kind of what I do now. Like, shit starts to come on and I immediately say a prayer, you know, like, God, help, you know, take this away from me. Help me get through this shit. When before it was, It was a very, very, I had to practice it a lot because that wasn't my first nature, and now it is. But I will say that, you know, I continue to be in a place where I really don't know sometimes what my higher power looks like, or what God looks like, or what it's supposed to look like, or, and I have a lot of trouble with that because I want to know, right? Like, I want to have this very defined idea of what it is because it kind of freaks me out when I don't have that idea. But I know when I do the work and when I work these steps honestly that it just fucking works, right? And that's how it works for me. It's practical, and it's mechanical. And if I do what it says in the book and if I do what my sponsor says, then it works and I'm taken care of. I don't have anything to worry about. But I will worry about it because that's just what I do. And that's why I go to meetings, because I need to be reminded of this stuff. And that's why I come out here, because I don't see a fucking room full of people that are brand new every day. And I haven't been brand new in a long time, and I forget because I get busy because I'm in school and I have a job and I have friends and I have all this shit going on. And I forget that I couldn't get out of bed without sticking a needle in my arm, right? And that was me. And I forget that. And I know other people that have forgotten that. And have drifted, far away from the program that, go back out or don't go back out. And I've had friends kill themselves in sobriety, not drinking, because they lost touch of spiritual program. It's scary, you stay sober for a while. And I heard people talk about it, you'll see people die. Whatever, I see people die. But yeah, people die from this disease, man. My family members have died. My friends have died. And luckily I haven't. I don't know how I haven't. There was plenty of times when I should have, right? So, yeah, I'm really grateful to this program. I'm grateful to AA. I'm grateful to my sponsor. I'm grateful I was given a chance to do something different. I'm grateful that I took that chance to do something different. And I don't know. I just had this one thing that sort of I wanted to read, and it's from Step 10. And that's kind of, I was thinking about it, and I think this is sort of the, when I think about sobriety and I think about sort of my program or, what I strive for, it's out of Step 10. Because Step 10 for me sort of sums up everything, right, in this book. And it says, this thought brings us to Step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and to continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. And this is the important part. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with somebody immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And for a long time, I didn't get that last part, right? And then we resolutely turn our thoughts to somebody else we can help. And I was just doing Step 10 to get rid of all the shit that I had, right? Like all this fear and resentment. When the point of it is to get rid of that shit, connect to a higher power, and then go out and help somebody, right? Turn my thoughts over to somebody else, because that's sort of the root of my problem, is my selfishness and my self-centered fear. And now I don't have to be that way. Like, I have these tools in this book in order to be a useful person. And I can call people and ask them how their day is, right? I can call my mom and ask her how her day is. I can go to work and not take people's shitty behavior personally. And, you know, I can ask them how their fucking day is. And mean it, right? Like, I can be curious and honestly want to know how someone's doing. And that's fucking huge for me. That's not the dude I used to be. And so, you know, and that's sort of my goal now, is to connect in a way that I've never connected before. And I don't know, man. Like, I don't know why we're all here, but I know that while we are, like, I just want to try to be a fucking good person, and I just want to, like, I just want to help in any way I can. But the only way for me to do that is to be vigorous with the steps, because without it, I am not that dude. And that's what I value now, you know, is to connect with other humans and to be useful. And I can honestly say that that's what I want, you know. And the only way to do that for me is to read this book, obtain a connection with a higher power, you know, talk to a sponsor, and just be honest, right? And that's what I've done, and I've stayed sober, and my life is, you know, I've gotten dividends from it. I've done things and doing things that I never thought I would be able to do, you know, musically, creatively. I'm in college. I'm going to get a degree. I went to college for a long time. I wasn't anywhere close to getting a degree. So it looks like it might really happen this time. I pay all my bills. I'm financially stable. That part took me a long time, maybe 6 years in sobriety. But I'm finally getting there. And I owe everything to this program. I owe everything to you guys. There's some familiar faces in here that it's, you know, it's good to see you guys in here. And I don't know. I'm glad you guys are here. And I just hope that everybody gets this thing, because it really is a gift. And I don't know where I'd be without it. So thanks for listening. Thanks.